Accession number 8984, roll number 1.
Commander Dreyer, Reel 1. Where were you born, Commander Dreyer?
In June 1918.
Where was that?
In Oxford.
And what did your father do for a living?
My father was a soldier. He was a gunner. And during the First War, he was on the staff in France, on El Hague's staff. And he also served in the Ordnance Board. He was rather a great technical gunner, inventing fire control equipments and that sort of thing. He ended up as a general in the army.
So how did you come to be in the Navy yourself? How did you make the decision?
Well, both my brother and I decided at a very early stage that we were going to be sailors. My father's younger brother was an admiral in the Navy, and a rather famous one, Sir Frederick Dreyer, and he had three sons, all of whom joined the Navy, and from a very early age we were absolutely clear that we wished to be sailors.
Where were you educated?
I was educated at a prep school near Haslemere called Ferndon, and then at the age of 13 I joined the Naval College at Dartmouth.
Can you remember the date that you actually joined the service?
Oh yes, I joined Dartmouth in January 1931.
And where did you go to afterwards?
After I left Dartmouth?
Yes.
I went to sea as a cadet, firstly, in the Frobisher, at the age of 17. And then I became a midshipman, and I did my midshipman's time in the Repulse and the Sussex in the Mediterranean, and in the Revenge and the Neptune in the Home Fleet. And I did my midshipman's destroyer time in the Esk, which was an E-class destroyer in the Home Fleet. And then I did my subs courses at Portsmouth in 1938 and 9, and became a sub-lieutenant at the beginning of 39, and I went as sub of the Nelson, which was the Home Fleet flagship then.
What was your reaction and the reaction of those round about you to Chamberlain's declaration in September 1939 that we were at war with Germany?
I think relief, really. I can remember very vividly. I was then just before that occurred, at the sort of beginning of August of that year, I was taken from the Nelson and sent to commission the Revenge, as sub of the Revenge. And in she was commissioned into the out of the reserve fleet. And we were working up the ship at Portland at the end of August and the beginning of September, and we had all been taken from our subs courses in 1938 in the Munich crisis of 1938 and sent to destroyers to commission up reserve fleet destroyers, and then that all lapsed and there was to be peace in our time, and we returned and finished our courses. But this time, I think it was so clear to all of us that this business had to be stopped. And there was really, when war was declared, there was relief that we hadn't backed out of it yet again, and that now the thing was going to be seen through.
Did you feel confidence that Britain could handle the Germans?
Yes, I think we did in a grotesque sort of way. We had our French allies at that stage, and I think we thought, we could, together with the Commonwealth, the Empire as it then was, I think we thought we could handle them.
What was your estimation of the German Navy at that time?
I think we knew it to be technically highly competent and efficient, and I don't know that we had any very great respect for its efficiency as a navy. I think rather we respected them for technical ability to build fine ships and fine equipment, but I don't know that we thought very much of their there obviously would be nothing wrong with their fighting abilities, because they're a tough fighting people, and that was quite clear, but I don't think we thought very highly of their operating abilities.
Did that opinion change or stay the same as far as you were concerned in the course of the war?
No, I think it didn't change. I think it remains a feeling that operationally they were rather inept. They all that one ever saw fought toughly and hard and efficiently, but they were misused. And they missed opportunities. Obviously, they took some fine opportunities and some spectacular ones, but they missed, particularly in my own field, they missed some tremendous opportunities.
Perhaps we can come on to some specific examples later, but did you feel that the Royal Navy was ready for the war when war was declared?
The Royal Navy certainly was extremely efficient in those days. Ready for the war is probably putting it much too strongly, because we were short of a great many things, and very especially we were short of anti-aircraft guns. I suppose it's true in retrospect to say that there was a lack of appreciation at high level in the 30s as to how devastating a weapon aircraft against warships would be, but certainly we were not very well equipped with anti-aircraft, particularly close-range anti-aircraft guns.
How did you personally come to be in Coastal Command?
Coastal Forces. Ever since I was a midshipman, when I saw in the Sussex the original first MTB flotilla arrive out in Malta, and they took part in some fleet exercises in which we were a target, I was quite clear in my mind that I wanted to get into those boats. One of the considerations was that one could get a command at a very early age, and that was attractive. But I was also very clear in my mind that MTBs were a powerful and formidable type of warship, and I wanted to be involved with them. So I started applying as soon as I went to sea as a sub-lieutenant, asking that as soon as I had my watchkeeping certificate, in those days, it's probably true today, the first thing you had to do as a sub-lieutenant was get a watchkeeping certificate. After you finished your sub-courses, you went to sea and you had to get a watchkeeping certificate, which took you 6 months to get. You got it in any larger form of warship. But I started applying to my captain and officially writing, "Dear or Sir, I have the honour to submit letters to the captain asking to be, for my name to be put forward for service in MTBs." And I pestered every captain I served with in the Nelson and the Revenge, and I went and saw the captain of the Hornet, which was the MTB base. The MTB base didn't actually exist in those days. It was being built over in Hasler Creek, opposite HMS Dolphin, the submarine base. So the Hornet was part of HMS Vernon, the torpedo school. The torpedo school in pre-war days had maintained limited control of MTBs, and all the senior officers of MTB flotillas then that existed were qualified torpedo officers. So I went and saw the captain of the Hornet and asked him too, and I actually went to the Admiralty, to the place that dealt with junior officers' appointments, and badgered them to get sent to MTBs. None of them was very receptive, but I made such a go at so many of them that finally I was successful, and at the end of 1939 I was appointed to HMS Hornet additional for MTB service.
Why do you think they were reluctant?
Well, there were very few boats in those days, and I think I was just a gash character. They didn't actually have a specific appointment for me. I was an extra.
Can you, at this stage, describe what the function of coastal forces was?
Then?
Yes.
Yes, I suppose it was rather limited, and nobody had precisely established what it would be. I suppose they were looked on as being a means of attacking the enemy, rather particularly in the enemy's harbours. They were obviously, by reason of their small size, they were local coastal operating ships, and they weren't in any sense ocean going then, and the Admiralty, I think, was very unsure of how they would be operated. For example, there were some being built at the beginning of the war by Thornycrofts, who had been the great CMB builders of the First World War, the coastal motorboats. There were some little boats being built by them to be carried in cruisers, and the thought was that those 45, 50 foot boats, very light and tiny, would be lifted out on a crane carrying one torpedo and a crew of one officer and three or four men, and in remote parts of the world would go and search out possible enemy raiders lying up in some foreign port and go and clobber them. The actual use to which the main flotillas would be put, I think, was awfully uncertain, and in anybody's mind in those days, how they would be operated. And it wasn't really until the war had progressed and we were faced with an enemy close across from narrow waters, and the passage of enemy ships up and down those coastal waters, that our obvious job presented itself.
Which was to be what?
To attack whatever enemy shipping there was operating up and down the coast opposite us.
Now, can you describe your own personal role in coastal forces once you joined?
Yes. When I joined in the beginning of January of 1940, I joined HMS Vernon, and for the first 2 or 3 months there, I and 2 RNBR officers who were there with me attached ourselves to whatever boat we could find that was going to sea, and we spent our time going round all the boats that were there, which weren't very many, and learning how the boats worked, what their equipment was, and how they could be operated. At that time, in the beginning of 1940, the first MTB flotilla from the Mediterranean had come home through the French canals from Malta, and was stationed at Felixstowe. And Felixstowe was the theoretically operational base on the east coast. But of course, that first flotilla of 60-foot British powerboat craft, they had nothing like the range at the beginning of 1940 to reach any potential enemy. Holland was still a neutral country, and the nearest German coast was, I suppose, 200 or 250 miles away. So there was no operating for them to do. The only way they could have got at anything would be to be towed over there and possibly, with luck, come home again after doing some operation in the German Bight. We had in Portsmouth at that time 2 boats, MTB 102, which was the Vosper prototype, and MTB 100, which was a Thornycroft, originally designed as a fast minesweeper and converted into a small MTB. Those two were acting as training boats to train officers and engine room people for the boat's building. There was also the 4th MTB flotilla gradually forming, which was the first Vosper boats coming into commission. And there were 3 of them already in commission, and they were starting to work up and would go to Felixstowe to join the first flotilla as soon as they were worked up. So we did our seagoing in whatever boat we could find that was going. And then in March of that year, I was appointed in command of MTB 102, the Vosper prototype. I'd done a good deal of my training in her, and she was a lovely boat to command as one's first taste of operating an MTB.
In what way lovely?
Well, she was the prototype of the class, and she was built with loving care by Vosper, who built her as a private venture with a view to selling her to the Royal Navy. And so they built her absolutely beautifully. The wardroom, I remember, of that boat, where we had 2 officers, went right across the boat, and one lived in princely comfort in her, and there was a very small crew of 8 chaps, and they lived in pretty good comfort. We had 2 torpedoes, 2 21-inch torpedoes, and when I joined her, we had no gun at all. She was largely being used for training and for any technical experiments that were needed for trying out new equipment and things at that time. And so I got my first command at the age of 21 in the spring of 1940. And very soon afterwards, I was promoted to lieutenant, and that made me senior to the RNVR chap commanding MTB 100. So I became the senior officer of the 3rd MTB flotilla, consisting of 2 boats, and we did the training from the Hornet. And just about this time, HMS Hornet commissioned. I remember very vividly, it was the 1st of April of 1940. And things started happening rather quickly. The invasion of Norway and Denmark happened somewhere in the early part of April, about the 10th of April, if I remember rightly. And soon after that, there was the invasion of Holland and Belgium at the end of April or beginning of May, and quite quickly it was borne in on us that everything wasn't going very well. All sorts of naval actions started happening, particularly with Norway. There was the great battles at Narvik, and there was the sinking of the Glorious, and quite a few destroyers were lost. And then there was the drama of Holland and Belgium, and our boats on the East Coast were involved both in mining some of the Dutch canals and in bringing people off from Holland. And then I remember we were just going to have dinner one evening in the Hornet somewhere early in May when we got a message to say that a Dutch MTB was arriving to join us. And we all got into my boat and went out to escort her in 102. And this was a Dutch MTB which had just finished building British power boats in Southampton, and had gone to Holland, got involved in the war, and turned around and come back again. And for the first time, we really realized that the war was getting very close.
What condition was this Dutch MTB in?
It was okay. It had been shot up by aircraft, but not desperately seriously. And I don't remember that it had any wounded people. So it was an operating boat ready to go.
So it was escorted into Portsmouth?
Yes.
And this would have been about May 1940?
This was, yes, early mid-May, I suppose. And then very soon after that, the situation was starting to deteriorate on the front in France, and I remember I got a job to take a liaison officer over to Le Havre from Portsmouth, who was to go and join the Highland Division. This was a commander in the Navy who was to be the naval liaison officer with the Highland Division, who were in North France, and who a bit later on got cut off, and there was the awful business at St. Valery where the Highland Division was all captured, and this rather celebrated naval officer, who was a commander called Bob Elkins, was captured with them and escaped and came across the channel in a rowing boat and rejoined. But anyway, I took him over to Le Havre, and that was our first sort of warlike experience. There was quite severe bombing in Havre going on while we were there, dropping him, and then we came back to New Haven and back to Portsmouth.
Well, the bombing was not directed at you?
Oh, not directed at that. No, they were just bombing Havre. But it was our first sort of serious warlike experience. And very soon after that, I got told one day that to take my boat to Dover, and this was the start of the Dunkirk operation. And 102 took part with several other boats for the whole of the last period of Dunkirk. And I suppose we did about 8 trips over and back to Dunkirk. And I've actually sent you a written report of our part in Dunkirk. Because for much of the time we carried, on several occasions, we carried Admiral Wake Walker, who was the flag officer afloat off Dunkirk. Admiral Ramsay was the flag officer in Dover running the Dunkirk operation, and Admiral Wake Walker was the rear admiral operating off the offshore at Dunkirk. And we carried him on 3 separate occasions during the operation over there.
What impression of him did you get?
Oh, he was a lovely chap, Wake Walker, charming chap, and he was very easy to have about the place, and exceedingly competent and very nice. Obviously a little MTB is not a bit equipped to carry an admiral, but he was very easy about our cramped conditions.
Did he seem harassed about the crisis?
I think we were all a bit harassed. We got rather thoroughly attacked. When I first collected him, he'd just been bombed in the destroyer Kief, and I was signalled alongside the Kief and went and took him off.